The majority of the delegates are those elected in the states, not Supreme Court. We did pass a rule after Bernie in 2020 that said superdelegates couldn't vote in the first round. That was a way to not have the deck stacked against the grassroots candidates elected. Almost everybody has been elected by Joe Biden in this election. 400 or so of the members of the Democratic National Committee are themselves elected on their own terms in their states. And then there are about 75 or so members of the Democratic National Committee appointed by the chair, whoever that chair happens to be. And then there are the elected officials who will come. So those are the different groupings we're talking about. We're already, like I said, seeing elected Democratic National Committee people saying, I'm uncomfortable with this. I'm afraid what's going to happen in my state.
And we just have 15 seconds, but if you could say, sure, what would happen if he wanted to step down in September?
It would not be good for the person he passed the baton to. It's too late to have a process, and it would be the sooner he does it, the sooner we put in place a process that is orderly, open, transparent, and viewed as legitimate by the majority of Democrats.
James Ogbe, I want to thank you for being with us. Former DNC executive committee member from 2001 to 2017, a current member of the Democratic National Committee, also president of the Arab American Institute. Happy birthday to Christine Marr. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for director of development to lead Democracy Now!'s fundraising efforts.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
That's Doc Watson, one of the many artists you can hear on the Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, when we share a wide variety of traditional and contemporary folk and roots music with you from 5:30 to 7 a.m. Each week, your hosts Dan Schrammack and Stephen Morrison bring you some of our favorite new releases and plenty of vintage favorites. It's a great way to start your Fridays, discover some new music, and find out about shows and festivals coming to the area. You can also find show playlists and listen to archive shows on demand via our website at kboo.fm and also via our free mobile app. That's the Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, where you hear a variety of traditional and contemporary folk and roots music from 5:30 to 7, right here on KBOO. We hope you'll join us.
Tune in to KBOO for our annual live broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival, broadcasting from Thursday, July 4th through Sunday, July 7th from noon to 10 p.m. This year's festival lineup includes St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Say She She, and Green Sky Bluegrass. Again, that's KBOO's broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival live from the Tomacull Waterfront, starting at noon from Thursday, July 4th through Sunday, July 7th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/wbf24.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council approves a contract extension for the Joint Office of Homeless Services.
Oregonians are on high alert for wildfire going into the July 4th holiday.
And in regional news, wildlife officials propose hunting barred owls in order to protect northern spotted owls.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Portland City Council has approved a 3-year contract for a new homeless response system. This after a 3-2 vote in favor today. Council members Renee Gonzalez and Carmen Rubio joined Mayor Ted Wheeler in voting yes. The decision means the city will continue to fund the Joint Office of Homeless Services, or JOHS, to the tune of about $30 million for the next 3 years. The JOHS receives funding from both the city and Multnomah County. There was doubt whether the city would continue to funnel money into the agency, especially given Commissioner Gonzalez's outspoken criticism. Gonzalez has long since been in favor of stricter restrictions on public camping. In April, he proposed a draconian alternative to Mayor Ted Wheeler's camping ban that would have penalized camping with up to $500 fines or up to 6 months in jail. So why did Gonzalez change his mind on funding the JOHS after years spent criticizing it? One possible reason may be the decision by the agency to halt tent and tarp purchases. Gonzalez himself announced the decision late last month in a social media post. The decision largely parallels one of Gonzalez's first acts made as Commissioner of Public Safety in early 2023. Then, as a cold front approached the city, the commissioner ordered Portland Street Response to stop distributing tents, citing a spate of tent fires as the reason. The move was widely condemned by response workers, who pointed out the city was unequipped to house homeless Portlanders in its shelters. The council's decision today comes with the option for the city to terminate the contract if it's not satisfied with the agency's work. That decision would come with a $250,000 penalty. The county will schedule a vote on the amended agreement later this month.
Local fire crews across Oregon will be working to limit the number of man-made fires in the state on what looks to be the hottest weekend of the year so far. Temperatures for the July 4th holiday are expected to be in the 90s across the state and over 100 by the weekend. In a recent wildfire briefing, the Northwest Interagency Coordination Center said its immediate focus is on the July 4th holiday. Carol Connolly with the agency says they can't prevent naturally occurring wildfires, but that isn't always their biggest concern.
Most of our fires in 2024 are human caused. So that's why we're really doing a big push to reduce the risk of starting those large catastrophic fires that are preventable.
People are being asked to check with their local communities for the most up-to-date information on fireworks regulations and limits, and also to take fire safety precautions when camping, off-roading, and cooking outdoors. Fireworks are illegal on public lands managed by the U.S. Forest Service. Connolly says southeastern Oregon is at a high forest fire risk this season. The recent lightning storms and increased foliage growth are a potentially deadly combination. She says if the public will help by limiting man-made fires, every resource will be available when a natural fire occurs.
So we're just starting to see some of that lightning on the landscape. We need our firefighters, you know, ready and poised for those fires we can't prevent.
The National Weather Service says Northwest and West Central Oregon, including the Portland metro area, are under an excessive heat watch from July 4th through the 7th.
Northern spotted owls are a key endangered species in the Northwest, one that environmental advocates have worked to protect for years. Logging destroyed much of their traditional habitat, old-growth forests, and it's meant hard-fought battles to allow these birds to survive. But a new strategy to help these birds live may be controversial. Officials plan to hunt their competitors, those being barred owls, which are native to the eastern United States. KBOO's Grant Button has more.
U.S. wildlife officials support a controversial plan to send trained shooters to kill almost 500,000 barred owls in the next few decades. The plan was created in an effort to save the dwindling northern spotted owl population. The northern spotted owl population has suffered in recent years due to the growing population of barred owls on the West Coast, which are larger and more effective hunters. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service released the strategy today, calling for a maximum of 450,000 barred owls to be shot over a three-decade span. Past efforts to revitalize the northern spotted owl population focused on saving their environment. But major gains have been tough, because fighting for habitat also meant harsh fights with the timber industry. Cassina Lee is Oregon's Fish and Wildlife Service state supervisor. Lee explained why this plan is important, saying, quote, "Without actively managing barred owls, northern spotted owls will likely go extinct in all or the majority of their range, despite decades of collaborative conservative efforts," end quote. Not everyone are in favor of the plan, though, as many believe the program will fail because officials can't control where barred owls go. There are also ecosystem and ethical concerns related to the planned shootings. The shootings will likely begin next spring, but are only allowed by specific groups and organizations designated by the Wildlife Service. An environmental study on the plan will be published in the coming days, followed by a 30-day comment period before a final decision is made. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
Oregon Health and Science University, or OHSU, has cut even more nurse jobs from their hospital system. A state filing under the WARN Act indicates another 297 OHSU jobs will be cut in a second round of layoffs in the coming months, including nurses. OHSU is in the midst of what they're calling a strategic realignment, cutting around 500 positions. This week, they cut a 16-nurse telehealth unit, the Connected Care Center, which was started on March 30th, 2020, just as the pandemic began. The university has cut a total of 22 nursing jobs in recent days. Duncan Zavetsky is a registered nurse and vice president at the Oregon Nurses Association. Zavetsky said, quote, "Cutting nurses is confirmation that OHSU executives will not limit their layoffs to non-patient-facing positions. Their cuts will reduce Oregonians' access to care and ultimately make it harder for more people to get the care they need when they need it," end quote. OHSU is also working on an expensive merger with Legacy Health, which includes an agreement for OHSU to invest big in upgrades for Legacy Health hospitals. In total, a new combined hospital system would include 12 hospitals and about 30,000 employees.
Next Saturday, July 13th, marks the opening of the brand new Holgate Library. Located on Southeast Holgate Boulevard, Holgate Library will be the first totally new library to open in Multnomah County since the completion of Kenton Library in 2010. The library is 21,000 square feet and features spaces for group learning, play spaces for children and families, a dedicated teen room with space for homework and technology, and much more. It will also feature book lockers for pickups, self-checkout stations, an outdoor plaza, and multiple murals in collaboration with the Regional Arts and Culture Council. As part of the opening, the library will host a three-day celebration filled with a wide range of community events, such as exploring traditional Vietnamese music or celebrating Hawaiian culture through hula dancing. The Holgate Project is part of a rebuilding push funded by a 2020 voter-approved $387 million capital bond. In addition to the Holgate Project, taxpayers can expect two more libraries as part of the capital bond, estimated to be completed in 2025 and 2026.
Washington State is receiving nearly $90 million in federal infrastructure funding from the Biden administration. The funds were distributed by the Rebuilding America Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity, or RAISE, program, and it'll boost eight projects in Washington. One recipient is the Kitsap County Public Transportation Authority, which is using the grant money to upgrade its transportation hub and clean up its bus fleet. Head of Kitsap Transit, John Clausen, says they're constructing a full-service maintenance facility, and not only to work on their diesel buses.
We're in the transition phase of converting all of our buses to battery electric buses, as well as we're exploring and wanting to move into the hydrogen.
The project is receiving $17 million from the RAISE program. It'll help Kitsap Transit with its goals of a fully electrified fleet by 2050. Kitsap Transit serves Kitsap, Clallam, King, Jefferson, and Snohomish counties in Washington. Clausen says the grant is also helping with the purchase of electric double-decker buses, which are needed for the increasing demand that Kitsap Transit is seeing. He says the funds from the RAISE program are critically important to moving this project forward.
That we put the fueling and the bus washing, that is all designed for a double-deck coach, but we have nowhere to maintain one. So we've held off on the acquisition of double-deck buses simply because we don't have a facility that we could maintain.
The RAISE program is distributing funds from the infrastructure law passed in 2021. The eight Washington State projects were part of a larger announcement from the U.S. Transportation Department about its distribution of $1.8 billion in funds to nearly 150 projects across the country.
Sentencing is delayed in former President Trump's New York felony conviction. Democrats vow a legislative overhaul of the Supreme Court. And the last female GOP senators are voted out of the South Carolina legislature. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I did my job. We did our job. Many voices out there. The only voice that matters is the voice of the jury, and the jury has spoken.
Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg won't oppose former President Donald Trump's request to delay sentencing on 34 counts of faking business records to cover up hush money payments to a porn star. Trump was due to be sentenced in a week. He's seeking a delay or to have the conviction overturned since the Supreme Court granted broad immunity to presidents for official acts. That decision makes federal charges against Trump for January 6th much less likely. But New York Democratic Congressman Joe Morelli says he'll introduce a constitutional amendment to reverse the ruling. He says no one, not even the president, is above the law.
There's no question that the president not only violated his oath of office, he precipitated an attack on the United States Capitol, on the Article I branch of government, the United States Congress. And I think there needs to be accountability for that.
In light of the decisions and numerous scandals, House Democrats are pushing Republican Speaker Mike Johnson to allow a vote on court ethics, term limits, or expansion. Johnson seems highly reluctant. White House officials will reportedly meet with Democratic governors today as calls mount for President Joe Biden to step aside from the race. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer says he can still win her battleground state.
When Democrats lead and when President Biden is leading, our lives are getting better. Our standing in the world is getting better. And I think that's something all Americans benefit from.
Meanwhile, Texas Congressman Lloyd Doggett is the first sitting Democratic lawmaker to publicly call for Biden to withdraw. Longtime Biden supporter Congressman Jim Clyburn of South Carolina tells MSNBC he's sticking with the president, but he'd support Vice President Kamala Harris should Biden drop out.
This body should not in any way do anything to work around Ms. Harris. We should do everything we can to bolster her, whether it's in second place or at the top of the ticket.
Polls following the first debate show Trump with a narrow lead among registered voters. Former mayor and U.S. Attorney Rudy Giuliani has been disbarred in New York for his efforts to subvert the 2020 election. Giuliani also faces criminal charges in Georgia and Arizona. The South Carolina Senate is losing its only three Republican women. Primary voters ousted them after they opposed a statewide abortion ban. State Senator Katrina Shelley says she's being called a baby killer.
You know, the one thing I did was I was looking out for women. I was looking out for girls and, you know, the future of South Carolina.
Only two female Democratic senators remain in the chamber, the least in any legislature in the nation. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, talking about his latest article breaking down the Supreme Court decision in Grants Pass v. Johnson. At 6, it's Big Picture Science Radio. Then at 7, The Global Sale with TK Kapura. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny and hot with a high of 89. Thursday kicks off an excessive heat warning that is scheduled to last through the weekend. Oregon and Southwest Washington residents are urged to take precautions. Today in history, in 1890, Idaho was admitted to the Union and became the 43rd state. The quote of the day is from Franz Kafka, the novelist best known for his novella, The Metamorphosis. He said, quote, "Anything that has real and lasting value is always a gift from within."
Officials have denied a parole request for Native American activist Leonard Peltier after 49 years in prison. Now his supporters are focusing on a presidential pardon as his health is failing. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
National Native News, I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Parole Commission is denying parole for Native American activist Leonard Peltier, who has served 49 years in federal prison. Supporters worry the 79-year-old will not make it to his next parole hearing. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Leonard Peltier is serving two life sentences for an incident in 1975 on the Pine Ridge Reservation that led to a shootout between American Indian Movement activists and two FBI agents. FBI Director Christopher Wray says Peltier fatally shot Jack Kohler and Ronald Williams. Wray says Peltier has never accepted responsibility or shown remorse for the incident and is wholly unfit for parole. Amnesty International calls Peltier's continued incarceration a human rights travesty. Some see Peltier, who is a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, as a symbol of racism and oppression against Native Americans by the U.S. criminal justice system. He's considered a champion for Native American civil rights. Nick Tilson is president and CEO of Indian Collective. He characterizes the parole denial like a death sentence.
Where they have chosen to take a boarding school survivor, taking America's longest serving political prisoner in American history that's indigenous, and keep him in prison for a crime that they have no physical evidence against him on.
Ed Woods is a retired FBI agent with the No Parole Peltier Association. He's fought for decades to keep Peltier behind bars.
There's been enough from Peltier that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that he's guilty. No matter how much he tries to pretend otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, justice spoke and continues.
Tilson says the organization will now push for clemency from President Joe Biden. Peltier's lawyers say appealing the parole decision could take years. Time to free Peltier from prison is limited. Supporters say Peltier's health is in decline. For National Native News, I'm Alicia Rubinger in Rapid City.
Two Montana tribes will receive about $60,000 to bolster cybersecurity. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports these grants are the first time the federal government has helped tribes with cyber defense.
The Blackfeet Nation will receive nearly $39,000, and the Chippewa Cree of the Rocky Boy Reservation will get nearly $22,000. These grants come as cyber attacks have become a growing problem for businesses and governments, big and small. The FBI says cyber attacks and financial losses have risen steeply over the past 5 years. 32 tribes across the country received funding. According to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, tribes will be able to apply for millions of dollars more of cybersecurity funding next year. The grants come from the bipartisan infrastructure bill Congress passed in 2021. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Alaska Federation of Natives Board of Directors recently announced the selection of Ben Mallah as the organization's next president. The AFN is the largest statewide Native organization in Alaska. Mallah has been with the organization for more than a decade, currently serving as vice president of external affairs. Board co-chair Joe Nelson cites Mallah's background in Alaska Native issues and state and federal public policy as key to his selection. Mallah will succeed Julie Kitka. She has led AFN for 40 years. Kitka will be the keynote speaker at this year's AFN annual convention in Anchorage in October to celebrate her legacy. Mallah will begin his new role in August to allow an overlap with Kitka through October. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Bird flu, the H5N1 virus, is spreading from birds to cows, having been found in more than 141 herds across 12 states. In preparation for a possible bird flu pandemic, the U.S. government will pay Moderna $176 million to develop a vaccine that protects against the H5N1 virus. The new vaccine will use the same mRNA technology that the company pioneered to develop COVID-19 vaccines. The biggest public health concern about the current bird flu strain is that it can spread from birds to mammals. This implies that it can be transmitted to humans and is capable of spreading rapidly. Dr. Tom Peacock is a virologist at Imperial College London. He said, quote, "The bovine situation is a step up, just due to how widespread the virus is and how many people have exposure to cattle," end quote.
Two Portland Thorns players will play for Canada at this year's Olympic Games. Forward Janine Becky and midfielder Jesse Fleming made the roster for Canada's Olympic team. This will be the third straight Olympics that the pair has played for the Canadian team. Becky and Fleming made their Olympic debut in Rio de Janeiro in 2016, where Team Canada won a bronze medal. Fleming scored two goals in the 2021 semifinal, helping Canada secure a gold medal in Tokyo. Team Canada will begin this year's games as a member of Group A and face New Zealand in their first game on July 25th. Other Portland Thorns players Sophia Smith and Sam Coffey will also be competing in the 2024 Paris Olympics as members of Team USA. The U.S. Olympic team is a member of Group B and will start the tournament on July 25th in a game against Zambia.
As Portlanders might be noticing, the summer is heating up. So is the sporting competition. For more of our KBOO News, KBOO Sports News segment, we have Grant Button.
The U.S. men's national team performed about as well as everyone thought they would, but hoped they wouldn't, losing in the Copa America group stages to Uruguay and Panama. Their first loss came against Panama, where one of their star wings, Tim Weah, got tired of the defender and decided to punch him in the head, resulting in a red card. The game went downhill from there, ending in a 1-2 U.S. loss. Their second loss came against a highly ranked Uruguay team, officially disqualifying them from the tournament. Uruguay's one goal clearly should have been called off, as despite the officials going to review and blatantly seeing multiple Uruguayan players were offsides, decided to rule that the goal was good. Quite frankly, unbelievable. On another unbelievable note, NBA free agency opened June 30th with lots of big-time signings, including the Philadelphia 76ers landing star Paul George on a four-year, $212 million deal. Other notable changes included Klay Thompson leaving the Golden State Warriors to head to Dallas, and veteran guard Chris Paul also leaving the Warriors for San Antonio to play alongside Victor Wembanyama. Oh, and don't forget, LeBron's son, Bronny James, landed himself, cue face of shock, a guaranteed four-year deal with the Los Angeles Lakers. On a related NBA note, the majority owners of the Celtics decided now was a perfect time to jump ship and sell the team. This was likely in an effort to avoid the massive financial burden that NBA plans to integrate for teams over the luxury tax in 2025. The timing is odd, considering they just won their league-leading 18th NBA championship, but hey, I'd sell the team too if I had a chance to make over $5 billion. For KBOO Sports News, I'm Grant Button.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is seeing the unbirthday of American democracy.
248 years is a pretty good run, but American democracy is crumbling quickly as a papier-mâché bridge. The Senate is purposely undemocratic, Wyoming and California getting the same number. Lifelong appointments of Supreme Court justices has often been a problem. And the way the two parties have made it impossible for any other voices, so America is now a one-party system with two wings of the capitalist party. Many elections, a choice of lesser evils. Friday's ARCO ruling saying judges know better than everyone else was a scary enough power grab, so of course they, three of them appointed by Donnie, ruled that Donnie has absolute immunity, assuming that assuring the re-election is part of a president's official duties. By the time that trial can start and end, the election will be over, or maybe nothing will be decided on election day. November 6th could be the new January 6th. Celebrate the 4th of July. This could be our last Independence Day. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips, predictions at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Grant Button, Grace Benson, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Mason Kennedy, Antonia Gonzalez, and Catherine Carley. The director of Evening News is, of course, Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, lovely folks like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We'll be speaking with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his latest story on the Supreme Court decision in Grants Pass v. Johnson. Stay with us.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, to talk about his latest story for the paper. It's called Supreme Court Rules Arresting, Citing People for Not Having Shelter is Constitutional. Supreme Court overturns ruling in Oregon case, decides criminalizing homeless residents for sleeping outside isn't cruel or unusual. Hey, Jeremiah, thanks for being here.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
So the Supreme Court decision in Grants Pass v. Johnson is the talk of the town, and you were actually there at the Supreme Court in D.C. when this case was being heard, so I'm eager to hear your thoughts on all of this. Let's break it down. What did the Supreme Court decide on Friday?
Yeah, so essentially the Supreme Court decided that it is okay for cities to level civil and criminal penalties against people who have no other place to go. A bit more hyperbolic version of that same statement is that it's punishing people because they have no other place to go. That's not so far off. I mean, this decision does really impact the way that cities are expected to respond to homelessness in their communities. And the court essentially ruled that the Ninth Circuit Court decision from a couple of years ago went too far in saying that Grants Pass ordinances leveling these penalties against people who are homeless violated the Eighth Amendment. So the court disagreed. They overturned that. And generally in the Ninth Circuit now, cities are able to punish people for their poverty.
So this was a 6-3 ruling, the conservative justices having the majority there. What was their reasoning? How did they support this decision that they made?